Welcome back to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by Scientific Triathlon and hosted by me, Michael Eriksson. Today is a bit of a special episode. It's the first time that I'm doing a rerun of a previously published episode. And this one is with Solveig Løvseth, the new Ironman World Champion, after her spectacular race on Saturday in Kona. This interview was originally published in episode 466, so that was published in July, and that's when I recorded the interview. It was a couple of weeks after Hamburg, or 2-3 weeks after Hamburg, and a couple of weeks before Lake Placid, Ironman Lake Placid, that is, that I did the interview, and I think it was published just days before Ironman Lake Placid, which Solveig then ended up winning. We'll get right into the episode after a super quick admin item that I want to mention, which is that I've started to use Spotify's poll function so that every episode I release a poll asking you to rate that episode. And if you use Spotify, it would be great if you start making a habit of just opening the poll section of that episode and giving me feedback through that poll. The only thing to keep in mind there is that since I'm not hosting on Spotify but on a different platform, I need to manually upload the poll, which means that it's usually available up to 12 or very rarely 24 hours after the release of each episode. I try to make it within 12 hours. Anyway, if you download the episode and listen to it right away as it is published, then try to come back and rate the episode later in the day when the poll is available. But that's it. I'll keep it really short and let's hear the interview with our new Ironman World Champion, Solveig Løvseth. Welcome to That Triathlon Show, Solveig. How are you doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm doing great. I am in Fontrimur now on training camp and yeah, life is good.
So you've been there for 10 days, I think you said. How long is the training camp going to be?
Staying here for another 13 days, I think. So in total, it's going to be
3.5 weeks.
All right, yeah. That's a good length for the camp. We'll get into what's next in your season a bit later, but maybe let's start a bit more with your background before we get into the rest of the season. So I want to just first ask you, when and how did you get into triathlon? Did you start as a kid or how young were you?
Well, yeah, I actually started with swimming. I started swimming mainly just to learn to swim. So it wasn't like nobody in my family does swimming or anything like that, but I just went to this swim kind of courses as a kid, and then I liked it, so I just continued really, and it got more and more serious, and I was a swimmer until I was 14-15, but at that point I did feel a bit that my sort of efforts wasn't really rewarded that much. I was training really well, and in swimming I think it's one of the sports where it gets quite serious quite fast, like in a young age. So I was training quite much at that time. It wasn't really that good. And it was eventually actually my swimming coach that suggested that I should do something else. And he suggested me to try triathlon because he had seen me running a few times and he felt that I might have more talent for that than for swimming. So yeah, it was sort of a hard conversation because I was still dreaming of being a swimmer in a way, and he basically told me that swimming wasn't for me. And then I was a bit mixed what to do next, and I wasn't really that keen on doing triathlon either. It's still a quite small sport in Norway, but this was back in 2014, and then I didn't really know anyone who did triathlon. So I felt like it was sort of a sport for, I don't know, a bit weird people maybe. So I was, yeah, it took a while for me to kind of decide to go with triathlon. But then I quite quickly got to know the other athletes on the national team back then. It was actually a quite nice time to start triathlon, I think, because it wasn't really that much structure yet in the national team and everything. So it was basically, if you were willing to train, you could get into the national team, basically. So I feel quite lucky for that I've actually been sort of a part of the Norwegian team for a long time. And even though I wasn't good when I started, I still got a lot of opportunities because we just had so few athletes in Norway. So yeah, that's how we started, and I've just been going on ever since.
And at what point did you start to, because you were skeptical about triathlon first when your swim coach suggested it, but you must have reached out to the national team and did you get excited pretty much immediately when you started talking about with them and thinking about it, or did it take some time for you to get really hooked on triathlon and realize that was your sport?
Yeah, I think it really helped for me just to meet more people that actually did it and meet like some young people that did it, realize that it wasn't just, I don't know, people in their 50s that did triathlon, but it was also actually some younger people that did it. So it started with that I went on this, they had kind of some open camps for everyone who wanted to try triathlon, and there I got to know some other people and that really helped. And after that, they invited me to go a camp with the national team like a month or two later. So like the first time I rode the road bike was on a camp with Christian and Gustav and everyone. So it was really a cool time. You just got kind of thrown straight into it. And actually my first triathlon ever was European Cup for juniors, and I was one of the last people there. But the Norwegian Federation has always been like good at giving people opportunities and just kind of throw them right into the deep end of it. So, but after that, I was, yeah, wanted to continue. I think it also helped that it was so few Norwegian athletes. So I, in a way, felt quite good as well, because it wasn't that many others. So I kind of maybe felt that I was mastering it a bit better than I felt when I was doing swimming. So that also helped. But it was still a phase, I would say, where I was struggling a bit with kind of giving up the swimming, even though I didn't really feel like I was doing that well at swimming at the time. It still was this feeling that I didn't want to give it up either, because I had been swimming for many years. So that was maybe the hardest part, to actually kind of go from swimming to triathlon, to just kind of give up the swimming, even though I'm still swimming basically every day. So haven't given it up completely.
Yeah, it's different in triathlon though. So and when something's been a part of your life, a big part of your life like that, that's very, very understandable, I think. And we won't go too much into that, but for listeners that are interested, I think there are some interviews that I've done with Adil before about how you built up the national team and trying to make the most of every young athlete coming through, because there wasn't anybody that you could waste. That is something that I think is quite impressive, and there's a lot of important lessons learned there, I think. So I'll link to some of those episodes in the show notes for those listeners who haven't heard those yet. But let's move on a bit and discuss then your overall career in triathlon in short course so far. So you went to the Olympics in Paris, and before that you were racing on the WTCS circuit and World Cups and Continental Cups and everything. Can you give an overview of how this part of your triathlon career has gone in your view?
Yeah, I did my first European Cup as a junior in 2015. So I actually been doing triathlon for quite a while, but it took some years, I would say, before I started to get some better results. So I've been lucky that I had like a federation that has been really patient and given us time to actually develop. So I would say maybe in 2021 was the year I started doing WTCS races, and maybe the year I felt myself that I started to get some better results. And that was also the year we actually tried to get me qualified for the Tokyo Olympics as well, just through the relay, because we wanted to have a relay team there. And at that time, we had obviously a lot of good boys. So we had Christian and Gustav and Kasper, and Lotte also did really well. But we didn't have any like second girl who was at that level. But we did try to qualify a relay team, because it was this direct qualification race in Lisbon. And if you got top three there, you would get directly qualified for the Olympics. And we got fourth there. So I was actually quite close to get a chance to race in Tokyo as well. But yeah, looking back, I guess I didn't really have the level anyway to do well in Tokyo. But it was maybe at that point I really got really motivated to actually qualify for the next Olympics. And it was only 3 years later. So tried really hard to get there, and it was definitely not easy, I would say, for me to qualify. I had a quite bad year in 2022. I didn't really race well that whole year, and my dad got sick that year and actually passed away as well, and it was really challenging to handle it all. But then in 2023, I started to feel a bit better and had some better results. I took a World Cup podium for the first time, and I won the European Games, and I was just starting to feel a bit better in racing. And I did eventually also get good enough ranking for the Olympics. And it's my race in the Olympics. Maybe we come back to that, but it wasn't really a really good one. But I'm really proud of the journey to get there. And like, I guess all athletes have different things they have to overcome on the way, but it's always cool when you kind of are able to go through different phases and in the end reach your goal in a way.
Yeah, first of all, sorry to hear about your dad. That's tough. And it must have been a hard time to go through that and then still try to qualify for the Olympics. But you did manage. And can you talk a bit more about what it actually was like in the Olympics and how your experience was? You probably didn't have the result that you hoped for, but but how was it overall?
I probably look a bit different at it now than I did straight after, but I think just in the whole period leading up to the Olympics, looking back I think I was quite stressed about the whole situation, and I really struggled to find my swimming shape in training. And I think swimming always has been the discipline, it's been the discipline I've kind of performed worst in, but also the discipline that has been hardest for me, like mentally. And if I have like a bad run session, I don't really read too much into it, but if I have a bad swim session, it's harder for me to kind of accept it in a way. And in the weeks leading into the Olympics, I just wasn't swimming really well in training, and I think I really got stressed by that, because I've been in this situation a lot of times in short course where I've been last out of the water, and it's really not a fun position to be in, and it's really hard to kind of stay in the race and to motivate yourself to just try to chase when you in a way feel that you have already lost the race. So I think leading into the Olympics, I was just really afraid to have a bad swim there, and maybe that didn't help on training either. And when you swim in a pool in training, you can also, it's really easy to know if you are sort of swimming at your best or not. And I was like, even when I swim at my best, I'm still not one of the fastest swimmers. So when I was also quite far from my best, I just knew that I wasn't good enough what I did in training. And I think, that was hard for me to accept. And you always try to find different ways to overcome it, or to try different strategies, and you also try to kind of trick yourself into thinking that it can suddenly get better really fast and everything can happen on race day. But I think when I was lining up, I wasn't really looking forward to the race. I just felt that it wouldn't go that well, and I think that's obviously not the feeling you want to have standing on the start line there. So it felt quite disappointing that I was sort of not feeling in my best shape standing there. I think like my bike and run shape was quite good, but I was just really stressed out by the swim, I think. And it was also obviously a lot of kind of drama around the water there in Paris with a lot of current and also the quality of the water, so we didn't even know if it was going to be a swim or not. And obviously the boys race were like cancelled or delayed to the day after, and we didn't even know if we were going to have a race. And that was also quite a surreal situation to go to bed and set the alarm for 3 or 4 in the day after and still don't know if you were actually going to race or not. And then eventually it was a race, and that was of course really nice, but I hadn't really tested the swim course either. And in the race, it was actually going okay, I think, until we hit that. We were swimming under some bridges, and on the way back, when we were swimming against the current, under the bridges, the water, of course, gets more concentrated. And I think I just hadn't reflected enough, like how much stronger the current would be under the bridge. And I was just really struggling to even move at all under that bridge. And I was like breathing to the side, and I felt like I was just standing on the same spot every time I was breathing. And then I just get a bit stressed, and I sort of lost contact with the others under that bridge on the first lap. And from that point, I think I also just lost my head a bit, because I felt like I had kind of destroyed my race already, because I saw that after that bridge, I was just really far off the front and also just far off everyone, basically. And then jumping out of the second lap, my head was just in the wrong place. So I actually forgot that it was one long loop and then one shorter loop. And because my head just wasn't in it, I forgot that the second loop was shorter. So I was just swimming towards the furthest buoy, and then suddenly the boats had to stop me because I was swimming way too far. So then I had to swim back. But then I think I ended up swimming 100 meters extra or something in the current. And then I was really feeling stupid that I was actually not only swimming slow, but also actually swimming wrong in the Olympics, where you should be well enough prepared to not do a mistake like that. And it's not like the course is that complicated either. So then I was just feeling really embarrassed of myself. And then the rest of the race was just really about getting to the finish. On the bike, I was like, the main goal was just not to get left out, really. And on the run, I actually tried to enjoy it a bit, just try to remind myself that I was in the Olympics, and the crowds in Paris were crazy. So it was also nice in a way, but ultimately I just felt that I really didn't get out my potential. And that is disappointing when you are in the Olympics, for sure, where you want to, like, the race you maybe the most of all want to show your potential, right? So that wasn't all fun. But except for that, like, when I look at it now, I'm really grateful that my first Olympics was in Paris, that it was in Europe, and it was easy for people to travel there. It wasn't any COVID restrictions, and I got to have a lot of family and friends there. And in general, it was just a really cool course, even though I didn't really like to swim there. But looking back, just cool to have been in the Olympic Village, just to see what the Olympics is all about. So now I'm more happy with it, even though my race still isn't good.
you always have that fact that you're an Olympian now, and that's a pretty big deal.
To
say that you've gone to the Olympics. Okay, so coming back after a technical issue, do you consider yourself done with the Olympics, or would you consider going back to the LA Olympics?
It's a good question. I haven't decided yet 100%. What I decided this year was that I wanted to just give long course, like fully commit to that for a year, and then kind of make the decision after that. So this year it's all about Ironman, and then I kind of consider after this season what will be the focus next year.
So what is the rest of the year looking like now for you?
Next race will be Lake Placid. So that's in 3 weeks, I think. And after that, I think I'll do Selamse, which is also a Pro Series race. It's a 70.3. And after that, it's basically just Kona and Marbella. So just the world championships left.
Yeah. And so far this season, your results, obviously you had, I think, the fastest Ironman debut ever in Hamburg, where you finished third in a very exciting race. And you've also won in 71.3 Venice. How do you feel about the season so far, and how the focus on long course is going?
Yeah, I'm really happy with the two races I've had. The start of the year wasn't the best, actually. In January, I did a lot of school. I had this, like, I'm studying part-time, but it's usually not my main priority. But in January, I decided to take this course where I had, like, 8 to 10 hours of school every day. So training wasn't really the main priority. And I know maybe looking back, maybe I still did a little bit too much. At least I ended up being a lot sick in February. And then I went to altitude camp in Sierra Nevada in March. And I was hoping to kind of turn it around there. But then I got sick there as well. So actually my plan was originally to do Texas and do my first full there. But I just felt like I had just lost way too much training. So I decided to postpone the start of the season a bit. But then after being sick the first week in Sierra Nevada, I finally was able to kind of get some consistent weeks of training in. And I was actually a bit surprised how quickly it started to feel good again. And I was really happy with my race in Venice. And then after that, I feel like the training has been going really well. So yeah, Hamburg as well was going, I was sort of doing what I was hoping to do there. And yeah, feeling good now. So it's excited for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Were you surprised by how fast you managed to go in Hamburg? Or was that something that you thought you were capable of?
I wasn't necessarily focusing that much on kind of the end time, but I had sort of an idea of what kind of watts I wanted to do on the bike and also what pace that I wanted to run. But it's of course hard to know for sure when you haven't tried a distance before. But I had a brick session 2 weeks before that was quite long and maybe the most specific session I did. And in the race, I did around the same watts and the same pace as I have had done on that session. So I would say that I did what I expected myself to do, but I was still, in a way, happy that it actually worked out. Because, as I said, you never know for sure if you can do what you try you or what you think you can do. It's so many examples of people that has, gone out too hard. And I wasn't sure if I was able to hold what I thought that I would be able to hold, but it seemed like sort of my expectations to myself were quite right for that race at least.
Yeah, and did you come away from that race with any new learnings, things that either, you know, that now this is what you're working on for Lake Placid to improve even more and for Kona later, something like that, any new learnings that you took away from that race?
Yeah, I think one of the things I learned is that I think on the end of the bike in Hamburg, I was starting to feel quite tired and I let go of Kat and Laura a bit and just tried to kind of concentrate myself a bit for the run. But when I started running, I actually felt really fresh. So I think that's a good experience to have, that to know that even though you feel quite tired on the end of the bike, it doesn't necessarily mean you're like tired in general. You're just, tired of the biking sort of, or like really specific muscles are tired. So that was a good experience to have, I think, to get to know that it doesn't necessarily have to affect each other that much. So maybe I can be even more sort of aggressive on the end of the bike in future races. And also I think the next step will just be to try to be a bit more maybe aggressive in general, try to maybe open the run a bit harder. I felt like I was starting to run really easy and it still got really hard in the end, but looking at how the best race now, like Laura and Kat, how fast they go out, it's really cool and inspiring to me. So maybe I'm not going to still not go out in the same pace as they do, but maybe try to play a bit more the distance. And you still need to have respect for it because it's super long, but in a way not have too much respect either. So I'm looking forward to get some more Ironman races and get more of that experience and kind of test the limits even more, I think.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. And I think your runtime 2:46 must still be, there are not many people that have run faster than that. Obviously, Kat and Laura have, but and Haug has, but is there anybody else who has a faster Ironman time than that on the marathon? I'm not sure. I think it's definitely one of the faster times in your debut. And when you say that you might be able to go a bit more aggressively, that's but that bodes well for your future. Do you think that the Ironman distance really suits you, or do you think that you can be equally strong on the middle distance and the Ironman distance, and they're both equally good for you?
I'm not sure either. I like both distances. Since I've only done one Ironman, it's hard for me to know, but I think I can do well in both. But I definitely like the Ironman distance, and I'm maybe more excited to see kind of what I can do in that distance, I think.
Yeah. So let's move into some training discussion. So maybe to start off, as you said before, you're on training camp now with the national team. So can you discuss a bit how it works? You're still involved with the national team. That's your coaching and training setup. Explain a bit more how that setup works for you.
Yeah. So I've been a part of the national team, as I said, since 2015. So for 10 years now. And actually this year, I'm not a part of the team just because the national team is short course focused, which was actually one of the hardest parts for me when I was going to make the decision to do long course this year, that I was a bit scared to kind of not be a part of the team because it's been such a big part of my triathlon career. So it made the decision definitely harder to do long distance, because I also knew that that would in a way mean to part with the team. But luckily for me, I think the Norwegian Federation is also trying to do some changes where you can do a bit more of both and still be a part of the national team. But right now I'm not an official part of the team, but I still have good relations with the coaches and athletes. So still joining them on camps when it fits my schedule as well, obviously. And this camp fitted well with my races. So I'm really happy that it's still possible for me to travel with them, even though I'm not a part of the team like officially. And when I decided to do long course, I asked Mikael Eden, that is the head coach of the national team, if he wanted to continue to train me, even though I did long course. And luckily for me, he wanted to continue as my coach. So, and he obviously also has some experience with coaching Ironman already. He's, for instance, also the coach of Rudy von Berg. So I kind of trust him in long course as well. So it's nice that I could continue with a coach that I already know and that also knows me well, and yeah, that I trust. And it's nice to still be able to do some camps with the team. So the transition hasn't been that big that I was maybe afraid that it would be. So yeah, it's working well, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. And if you try to describe what your training looks like in your own words, how would you describe it?
I would say it's very typical Norwegian in a way. It's a lot of threshold, quite much volume. I haven't actually changed my training too much after I moved over to long distance. I feel like my weeks are in general quite similar, but the biggest change is that in the weeks leading into race, I've done some longer like brick sessions on Sundays. So I've done some longer bike running sessions with more specific race pace. But except for that, the rest of the week is mainly threshold and easy sessions, and not that many crazy long sessions either. Just really much the same as it has been.
And what is roughly the overall weekly training volume?
It depends quite much. Right now, when I'm at camp here, it's around 30-hour weeks. So yeah, quite much, but not too crazy either.
And when you're not at camp, when you're at home, it's a bit lower then?
Yeah, sometimes. But I mean, if everything works well, I could do 30 hours at home as well. But it also, of course, depends if it's a race coming up or if it's right after a race. Like after Hamburg now, I had two really easy weeks. And obviously at the start of the year, as I said, I was a lot sick. So then I didn't have much training volume either. So it definitely depends, but in, I would say, good training periods, it's 25, 30 plus in that area.
Mm. So when you're in a good training period like this at camp, up to 30 hours per week, how does it break down between swimming, cycling, and running? How many swims do you do each week? How many bikes and how many runs? And what is your weekly swim volume, bike volume, and run volume? If you have that data either in your head or in front of you.
Yeah, it's right now most weeks follow the same structure, so it's quite easy. We usually do 6 swims a week, and I think roughly around 30K. So let's say in average 5K swims, some shorter, some longer. And on the run, I usually run every day, but some runs are shorter, obviously. But yeah, in good periods, maybe around 70 to 90K weeks usually. And on the bike, I usually have 5 bike sessions. And in hours, it's often not that much. I think most, like, especially in long course, probably a lot of people ride more, but it could be like 10 hours, sometimes less, and sometimes maybe 12 or even 14. But yeah, usually not crazy bike volume. And then also I have 2 shorter, like, strength core sessions as well.
Yeah, yeah. On the bike, you're right. That sounds, especially if you do 30 hours, probably most people who do 30 hours would do a bit more of that as cycling than you do. So that is quite interesting. But you do, yeah, if you run every day and you swim 30 kilometers, definitely that takes up a bigger proportion of the overall training time. So yeah, that makes sense. Can we maybe go through maybe last week of training, if that's possible, especially going through the key sessions that you did to get an idea of what that looks like?
Yeah, we can. Actually, last week was the week with quite much riding. Then I had almost 14 hours, but that's actually quite rare for me to have that much. But
we can go with that week. That's fine.
Yeah. I would say it's still like a quite normal week on camp. So we usually have easy days on Monday and Friday. So Monday last week I did just an hour run and an hour strength and 4.4K swim. And then on Tuesday we had threshold on the run and on the swim. So had like a quite long threshold session on the run with 5 times 2K and 5 times 1K. And a quite long threshold session on the swim as well with 6 times 500. And then just an easy bike. And on Wednesday, I did... Oh, this is actually this week. Yeah, okay, but last week was quite similar. So I can go to Wednesday. And Wednesday, I did 2.5 hours of riding and 1 hour run and 4.5 swim, just easy, all of it. And on Thursday, it was intervals again on the bike and on the swim. So then it was 8 times 8 minutes on the bike and 15 times 200 threshold on the swim and just an easy run. And then Friday was easy day again. So we had 90 minutes really easy run with some walking as well in it. And then we did an open water swim around 4K and then some strength as well. And Saturday we had a long easy day again with 5.5 hours of riding. That was actually one of my longest rides this year. And then just a short run off the bike. And then Sunday we did a threshold on the run again with 20 times 400 and also threshold on the swim with 20 times 100 plus 12 times 50 a bit faster and a short bike. Yeah, that was a lot of a lot of training session to say out loud.
Yeah, but that's good. Love it.
In general, we often have swim like Sundays with no swims, but last week we had Saturday just because of the pool times here really, but the rest of it just follows basically the same structure with easy days on Monday and Friday and intervals on Tuesday and Thursdays and Saturdays, and usually, yeah, quite long and easy on Sundays. So that's kind of the main idea.
Yeah. And so a couple of questions. When you do easy whatever, easy cycling, easy running, are there any specifics to that? Like, do you just go kind of really easy on feel, or do you try to keep a certain pace or power in a certain range, in a certain zone or something? How do you do your easy training?
Yeah, it's just based on feel, really. And sometimes also based on who I'm training with, to be honest. So if I'm, for instance, doing a ride with the boys, it might be a bit harder than if I had done it alone. So stuff like that also plays in. But of course, if the boys are riding like way too hard, then I drop off. But I'm quite flexible up to a certain point, I would say, like how hard or how easy it can be.
Yeah. And when you do your sessions, especially the threshold sessions, how hard do they feel? Something like the 5x2K plus 5x1K running, or the 8x8 minutes on the bike. Is that something that you get to the end of that session and you're basically pretty close to it being, you know, you don't want to do another minute? Or is it controlled enough that you could do another interval or two if you needed to?
It really depends on the day, I would say, on threshold sessions, especially if they're quite long. I always feel like I could do a rep or two more, and usually more than that as well, probably. But I definitely have some threshold sessions where I really don't want to do any more, because it can be quite hard then in the end if it's like a long session. So, but it's really different from the day. I go mainly based on feel, but I also use lactate as well. And some days I feel like the speed comes easy and I feel like I could, it feels really controlled to be on threshold, but other days it can also feel quite hard, I would say.
Let's move into some mix of questions, really. Some are quite reflective and others are just other questions that I couldn't fit into a certain section here. But the first thing that I want to ask is, if there are some things that you have learned about yourself and how you respond to training, so certain things that work well for you and other things that don't work well for you in terms of training interventions or anything really related to the training process.
Yeah, I think in general, I feel like I respond quite well to doing high volume. And I also usually feel like I tolerate quite high volume. I've been really lucky that I have never really struggled with injuries or anything like that. Of course, I had some periods where I've been sick and lost some training because of that. But like when I feel like my body's working well, I like to do quite high volume. And except for that, I think maybe the biggest thing I've learned is also to try to get better to also know when to slow down a bit. And especially if something happens around training that makes resting a bit harder, to just kind of get better to understand how that affects my body, like the total load on the body. So I think, as I said, January this year, it might be an example of that I'm not always the best at knowing when to cut out a session. If I haven't slept enough or if I have had just too much to do, I still want to get the sessions in. So I think I still can improve a bit on that. But yeah, when in periods where training can be my main focus, which is usually all the time, and where I feel like I get enough rest, I just feel like my body's working well, then I think high volume and basically the training I do now is maybe the best way I can train. Or it's, of course, things that can be improved, but I feel like I'm sort of on the right path. I think maybe swimming is the one that I think is hardest to know how to train properly. I feel like I have a good idea, and also my coaches has a good idea, like how I should train running and cycling, and I feel like if I do enough threshold sessions and enough sessions in general and just have good momentum in the training, I I have improved basically every year. So I feel like it's a quite easy kind of recipe to follow in a way. But with swimming, it's more complex and the technical aspect is much bigger. And it doesn't necessarily help to just do a lot of threshold sessions if you're not efficient enough. So that's maybe still the part of the discipline that I think is most challenging to kind of train correctly.
Are you doing regularly some things to try to figure out that the technical aspect? Are you doing video analysis and or just getting a lot of technical feedback on your swimming and try to work on that as well? Is that something that is part of your training in swimming?
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like I'm on a good path now with my swimming. For instance, when I'm not at camp, when I'm training at home, I actually do a lot of the running and cycling by myself, but I always swim with a swimming club. I feel quite dependent on getting the feedback and I don't really trust myself too much swimming alone. And I have a good swim coach there and also good coaches on camp and also get a lot of good support from the Norwegian Olympic Federation, and we have filming quite often, not too often either, but like trying to see if make a plan of what you want to improve and then maybe film it 1 or 2 months later from a lot of angles and see if it has actually worked out the way we think it would. It's also hard with technique that you just need to trust that the changes you are doing will eventually work because it's not going faster right away. So you just need to try to change something. And it also feels so weird to change something. Like, I guess I have taken like a million so strokes in the water, right? So it's really dialed what I do right now. And then to change it is really hard, I think. And it doesn't really necessarily go faster. It often goes slower as well. But you just need to trust that it's still a change for the better. Often the videos can help you to believe that it's better if it looks more efficient, and then you just need to kind of be on that path long enough. And I have really been focusing on my swimming. For instance, I did a camp this fall where I did 2 hours of swimming every morning and every evening with basically only drills and technique with my coach. So I had I think I had almost 30 hours of swimming that week with just technique and just drills. So it's still something I'm working a lot on. It's quite funny since my background is from swimming, and it's still the discipline that I think requires the most from me and also requires the most of my kind of brain capacity, I would say. But I'm feeling optimistic, and it's honestly doing long course this year is nice for me mentally as well. I'm not stressing as much with my swimming as I sometimes doing short course, and it's really nice actually to also be on the start line and know that even if I have a bad swim, I won't get the same feeling that I have kind of destroyed my whole race. So I feel definitely less pressure around it in race situations, and I think that also helps me in training. Actually, I feel a bit less stressed about it in training, which I think allows me to just take some steps back and just really focus on the technique. So I think, some people might think that long course is kind of not ideal for the swimming, but I actually think for me right now, it also helps for swimming and will then again help me if I decide to go back to short course. So it's funny that I have been swimming for so long and haven't really improved that much the last year. So it's weird that I still can be that optimistic that I will get better, but I really believe that I can improve and will improve the next year. So it's exciting.
Well, if you don't have the belief, then that really reduces your chances of actually being able to improve anyway. So you do have to believe, right? So I think that's...
Yeah. And if you don't believe you can get better, it's a waste of time to swim those 30Ks a week, right?
Yeah. Yes. So do you have like 1, 2, or 3 pieces of coaching advice that you've received in your career that you think are, wow, those were really good pieces of advice that somebody gave me?
Yeah, good question. I think most of my advices are quite like basic, and some are based, it's based both on like what I've heard from others, but also just personal experience, I would say. One important thing is to listen enough to your body. As I said, I'm not always the best at that myself, but just really be aware of how much things outside of training, like everyday stress, and especially for younger athletes that are still going to school, how much that will affect your ability to train. And when I was in high school, I was training a lot, but I was definitely not sleeping enough. And I think even though I was able to do all my sessions, when I'm looking back, I definitely don't think I was doing it in the best way I could, because I wasn't really improving much from my sessions, because I think I was just too tired on most of the sessions. So when I quit like doing full-time school and had got much more time to rest, I just realized how big of a difference that made. So maybe prioritize resting enough is really important, and also to eat enough. That's something I feel like the national team is really good at having as a focus for all the athletes here, that you need to fuel for the work you're going to do. And that's, I guess, in general, a bigger focus in most of endurance sports these days. But when I also started to be more aware of how much carbs I needed and to actually get that in, it really makes a difference on how much you can train and how good of a quality you can have on your sessions. So that's for sure also important. And except for that, I think maybe my best advice would be to have fun with the training and not take it too seriously, especially not from a young age. I actually think a lot of athletes end up quitting quite young. That's definitely been a problem also in our team, that a lot of athletes with a lot of potential quits. And I think a part of it can just be that they are kind of expecting too much from themselves too early. And I, for instance, was definitely not a good junior athlete, but I still had fun with the training and enjoyed it. And I think that's what made me kind of stay in the sport. So that's really important. Except for that, just consistency is also the big one, I think. Just if you're training consistent and over many years, you will get better. So that's it's just that easy, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's simple but not easy, I guess. It's easy to understand that, but it's sometimes hard to execute on it, to avoid injuries, avoid illness, and so on.
Yeah, for sure.
What you said about the focus on fueling led me to, we had some listener questions, and one of the listener questions was, do you track calories and how do you make sure that you eat enough? Yeah, how do you make sure that you eat enough?
Yeah, I've never tracked calories, but I feel like my body's quite good at telling me like when I'm hungry in general. But on training sessions especially, I'm quite aware like how much I would need of then especially carbs. So I'm kind of counting carbs on long sessions, and how much I need per hour depends on how long the session is and what other sessions I have that day, the next day, the intensity of the sessions as well. But I'm really focusing on like trying to stay on top of the nutrition. And even like if you have, for instance, a swim, like for a 4K swim, you don't necessarily need any carbs for that specific session, but it's good to get in some carbs just because you're probably going to have more sessions that day. And so just trying to stay in balance that way. And except for like the normal eating outside of training, I just try to eat a lot really. And I think I'm quite lucky in that way as well, that I know some athletes on my team, and they actually struggle with like eating enough because they're not that hungry. So they kind of almost have to force the food down sometimes. But I'm usually hungry when I need to eat. So I have a big appetite. So it's easy for me to get a lot of food in, and yeah, try not to have a too kind of strict focus on it either, but just eat a lot, you will be good.
Yeah. And related to that, in racing, what was your target carbohydrate intake on the bike and the run for Ironman Hamburg?
I think I actually consumed quite much there. I think I had around 600 grams on the bike, so, and it was 4.5 hours. I think I was around
140, 140, I think, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And on the run as well, I think I had actually a bit more than 350, 360, I think. So, yeah, actually around 120 on the run as well.
Yeah. Very good.
I think my stomach usually handles it quite well. So, I haven't really done any tests to know exactly like how much my body can absorb. So, I don't really know if 120, 140 around that is kind of the optimal, but I was just trying to do it quite safe and just take in a lot and hope for the best.
Yeah. Well, it seems to have worked out. And are there some myths or misconceptions among age group athletes about what it's like to train and race as a professional?
That's also a good question. I think a misconception by some age groupers might be that athletes just eat like really healthy all the time, while you should of course eat enough vegetables and stuff like that, but you can also as well eat a lot of food with a lot of sugar, for instance, and just sometimes it's more important to get in enough calories than all the calories having to be really healthy calories in a way. And when it comes to, sometimes you also just need to think what's your stomach can actually tolerate, like if you're gonna eat too much, like eat a lot of food and it's also a lot of food, a lot of fiber, for instance, it can just sometimes be too much for the stomach, so then you maybe choose products with less fiber, for instance, stuff like that. That was the first thing that came to my mind. It's probably better.
Yeah, I wasn't meaning just in terms of nutrition. I was meaning in general. It could be anything. Not training or even the lifestyle and
good question. I just don't talk enough to age groupers to know what they really think. But in my experience, a lot of age groupers are really well informed and really like searching a lot of information, so I feel like a lot of them are probably knows a lot.
I think that's fair. What you mentioned or you alluded to already when we discussed your training, that the way you train with high volume threshold sessions, and that's kind of what you see as the Norwegian method. And I had a listener question here, which was from Henry, who asked, is the Norwegian Olympic program, so the national team, is it tilted towards long distance training? Or is it that the individuals within the program are naturally good at the longer distance training?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think in short course, I think it's like several different approaches that can work out really well. So I would definitely say like the way we train in Norway is more, it can work for short course, but let's say it's more like in training for Olympic distance and longer, whilst maybe some countries have more focus on high intensity, and it's maybe training that can work well like up till Olympic distance, if that makes sense. But I think it's maybe a combination of those two, that the training we do also works well for longer distances, and maybe we have a way of training where we have quite much volume from a young age that makes it easy for us to also tolerate that if we go to longer distances. But I think also it has a bit to do with the athletes as well. For instance, for me, I think, unfortunately, in the short course, one of my biggest struggles has always been the swim. And in long course, the swim is less important. And I think like my swimming and the fact that the swim, my swimming isn't the best doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with how we train in Norway. It's more, more that I like haven't really figured it out yet.
Yeah, and that's, it's really interesting because sometimes everybody who didn't start swimming when they were young always, or a lot of people at least, seem to think that, oh, if I only had started swimming when I was a kid, then I would be a great swimmer now. But in reality, that's not really at the world-class level. At least you can definitely not say that that's the case. Very few people actually become, even if you commit to swimming and start swimming early, very few people make it to a very high level in swimming, and even to a very high level in triathlon swimming, which is lower than actual swimming. So yeah. It's not just as easy as just starting young and then you'll automatically figure it out. There's probably a lot of just natural talent that goes into it, which could have to do with just your anatomy and your mobility and things like that, that makes it easier to achieve the right technique.
Yeah, I feel like swimming is a lot about kind of your feeling for the water. And I think it's something that can be teach, but it's really hard to learn it. But some people also just kind of have an understanding of it, just gets it really quickly. And I think, yeah, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just looking through the listener questions. I think we've covered most of the other questions already in our discussion. So let's finish off with some quick fire questions. You may or may not have this available, the answers available, but let's try. So the first one is, what were your total training hours for 2024?
Yeah, I actually saw that you had a question and I tried to find it, but I actually don't know. I'm not sure where I can find it either. It's not really something I've been looking at ever, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I would guess at least about 1,000 hours, but probably, yeah, a bit more than that. But
yeah, that's what I also think.
Actually have no idea.
Yeah. What is the best VO2 max you've ever tested?
I think I've done 76 a couple times on the bike as the highest.
And is there a big has there been a big difference for you between the bike and the run?
Not a big difference, but a little different difference. I think it's, you can more easily activate kind of even more muscles when you ride. So if I do, I've done like run a bike with a couple days in between sometimes, and then I'm usually maybe, if the bike is 76 and the run is maybe 72 or something like that.
All right. And LT1 and LT2 on the bike and run?
It's also, yeah, different from session to session really, but on the run, LT2 is, I would usually say around 335, 330 maybe. And on the bike, it could be anything from 260 to 300 watts or something like that. LT1, I haven't really checked in a while, but if I have a run session that is LT1, I would maybe run around 4 minutes or just underneath that. And on the bike, maybe 240, 250 watts or something like that. But yeah, I also go by feel. So it's not the same on every session.
Yeah. And how much do you on average sleep per day, including also naps if you nap?
Yeah, I'm not the best sleeper. I think in average, maybe just about 7 hours. I usually try to get in more rest than that. So I would often go to sleep maybe 8-9 hours before I'm going to wake up. But I usually spend some time before I actually fall asleep. And in the day, I usually try to nap. Like I will usually set an alarm and kind of close my eyes, but I rarely actually fall asleep. So I would say I rest a lot, but at least compared to the other people on the team, I'm not the one that is sleeping the most.
And do you have a bucket list destination race?
I would actually say no. I think it's really cool that with triathlon that you get to travel around to a lot of places. Yeah, I'm going to do Kona this year and I'm really looking forward to that. And I just heard a lot about it. But like when it comes to outside of triathlon, when I have like time to just be wherever I want to be, I think like I would much rather prefer to just have some days off in like Norwegian mountains or something like that and just basically be at home instead of like, I'm not maybe the biggest person on sightseeing and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Are you from Trondheim? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And so where would you go? Would you just be at home or right outside of Trondheim or do you go somewhere else in Norway if you were to go for a nice relaxing mountain time away in the mountain?
I really wish that I had more time to actually see more of Norway, because for instance go more to the north of Norway and see the mountains there and also just it's so many beautiful places that I just haven't been to, so because I'm traveling everywhere else instead, so that's definitely something I want to spend more time like exploring maybe after my triathlon career. And also like in the off season, I think it's much more cool to just go on a hike or something than to go on a holiday in a warm country.
yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, Kona will for sure be the race itself, if nothing else, the outside of the Olympics, at least the biggest race for sure on the scene. So that'll be an exciting one.
And yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I don't have any more questions. So thank you so much, Solve. This was really great. Where can people follow you?
Instagram, you can follow me. And also on Strava. I've been a bit lazy on Strava lately. Like, I think from 2019 to 20 or 2021, maybe to last year, I posted basically all my bike and run sessions. But this year, I've been a bit more lazy. So maybe I need to try to step up my Strava game again. But yeah, Strava and Instagram, I would say.
Yeah, great. Well, once again, thank you. It's been really great to chat to you. Appreciate it and hope to do it again another time.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed listening to that interview, maybe listening to it again. The reason that I published this as a rerun is I'm definitely not trying to be a news outlet or a current events podcast, but as you know, if you're a regular listener, a big part of the That Triathlon Show ethos has always been about high performance, understanding high performance, learning about high performance. And that's definitely something that this interview with Solveig highlights and really fulfills that ethos, that objective, I guess. And I wanted to make sure that as many people as possible get a chance to listen to it, because when I originally released it in July, for a couple of reasons, it didn't get that much traction. One reason is that, Solveig was, for most people, probably a pretty low profile athlete still at that point. And secondly, July and August tend to be really low download months relative to other months. I think this might be because those are the months when people have more vacation and don't have their normal routines with work commutes and stuff, which are times when a lot of people tend to listen to podcasts. So for those reasons, I think that, yes, Solveig should have more downloads than she had on her episode. And I hope that now is a good time to release it. And I know that also a lot of you listen to some of your favorite episodes multiple times, which I also do, to be honest, personally. There are some episodes that I feel like I learn a lot from and I listen to them multiple times to really try to retain that information. And I think that this one has the potential to be one of those episodes that you can listen to at least twice and you get something out of it both on the first and the second time, if not more. Just as a personal reflection as well, without trying to get into the news or current events side of things, but just staying on the high performance learning side of things, I think that in light of Solveig's win and the podium sweep of the Norwegian men at the Ironman World Championships in Nice, it just highlights how many great athletes have come through that Norwegian system and originally starting with Adil Tveiten setting up national team. Solveig, of course, is coached by Mikael Eden, as we discussed in the interview. And by the way, if anybody knows Mikael and could nudge him to come on the podcast, that would be amazing. I would love to interview him. I do think that he's somebody who prefers to work quietly in the background, so I'm not sure that I would manage to get him on without any help from somebody who is more who knows him personally. But either way, before being coached by Mikael and Mikael being the national team coach, Solveig was coached by Adil Tveiten, who set up the Norwegian national team from the ground up. And he's somebody that I, for the last 7 to 8 years, have been following and trying to learn from as somebody who I think is one of the best in the business. I've interviewed Adil 4 times in 2018, 2020, 2021, and earlier this year. And I'll put those episodes, links to those episodes in the show notes. But I just wanted to highlight these episodes because nobody becomes a world champion overnight. It takes probably a decade, close enough to a decade anyway, of good hard work. So I just find it really incredible that in 2025, we have four out of six athletes on the Ironman World Championship podiums, including the two winners, coming from that one same system in a very small country. And I wanted to highlight that in those interviews with Adil, he's always very open. So I really recommend listening to those interviews if you want to learn more and to put some context, I guess, to the results we've had and the Norwegian dominance once again in the Ironman World Championships, but to a greater level now because we also see it on the women's side with Solveig, which is really great to see. And yeah, personally, I find it really fascinating coming from Finland, a country that is basically identical in size to Norway in terms of population and has similar circumstances, similar opportunities, similar obstacles, but absolutely no success in triathlon and much less success in general in sports. But I think that coaching is a big part of that. And the Norwegian coaching system, not just in triathlon, is just really impressive. And I think that is something that we can learn from. It's one thing, I think, to have a lot of successful athletes when you also have the ability, you can afford to waste a lot of athletes. But this is something that even from the first episode, the first interview I did with Adil, he talked about that they couldn't leave anybody behind. They needed to maximize the potential of everybody because they had so few athletes to choose from. They didn't have 16 great athletes starting in the national team. They had 16 athletes. Those were the ones they had, and they had to maximize the talent of everybody. And anyway, so I think that this is a reason to listen to those interviews and learn from them, because I think that there's a lot to learn from that. And like I said, now Solveig has been coached by Mikael Eden for a long time. So a huge credit to Mikael, who's also been heavily involved in Kasper Stornes, his development, of course, for several of the recent years. So again, would love to chat to him if he's listening, or somebody who knows him is listening. It would be great to get connected. All right, that's it for today. This was a bit different than the usual programming, but again, I hope that this interview reached more listeners and you found it valuable. And if you have any feedback, please let me know. I'm really eager to get feedback on the podcast. You can reach me on email, Instagram, or in the Spotify comments for this episode. And remember to use the Spotify poll to rate the episode as well. We'll be back with more regular podcast programming soon. And until then, keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.